So, I think we're probably not going to totally finish Zariah today. But again, it's a lopsided malacha.
It takes three days to do Zariah.
That's right. So, there you go. Very good point. That's a perfect segue. Okay. So yes, indeed, it does take 3 days. At least as the right day to do Zariah. So it probably will take us 3 days. But, you know, there are overlapping concepts, and again, the other malachas get progressively shorter, at least within Siddur Depas, not counting Vishal, so don't get too nervous about that. Do we have Shir on Sunday?
No.
So, okay, we have today, tomorrow, and Thursday.
And Friday morning.
We do have Friday morning?
I think we have Friday morning Shir. Didn't we say we have Friday?
We did. Really? Oh, interesting.
Is that what we said? Do you recall that?
I recall Friday Seder for sure. I didn't know what the story was with Shia.
You'll figure it out, but if you want, maybe you could do it later, so you don't have to make two. You know,
that would be better.
Oh, that would be.
Meaning, if people are coming in that way, like you're bringing your family, we could do it a little later and start later. We could do that.
Yeah, that would be.
I'm perfectly fine with the schedule right now.
Shabbos afternoon, Shir?
Yeah, we could do it on Shabbos afternoon.
Do it on Shabbos afternoon.
Okay, that's fine with me.
We'll figure that out.
Okay, so then we'll do it that way. That would
be cool. There will be a Friday Shir, whether it's on Friday or not. Will
right.
Be determined.
That also again, Friday for Shabbos also leads into our topic. There are a lot of good segues. Okay, so Sunday not. So I guess Monday we'll try to do before Chatzos.
Yeah. So Monday will be like half a day. There won't be any Shemesh.
Right. What time is Chatzos? Right around the same time. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll
I think we'll end with Shir, and then people can go home, and then they could come back for the Tisha B'Av program in the afternoon on Tuesday.
Okay.
And then Wednesday, Thursday, regular days, and Friday we could do whatever we're doing this Friday.
Mm. Well, then if we do it on
except
Friday,
Shabbos wouldn't work because
right. So we do it. Right. So then if we do it on Friday, we'll do it earlier. Yeah.
We'll need a Summit tape recorder.
What?
We need a Summit tape recorder.
A Summit tape recorder.
Right. Okay. Alrighty. So essentially, yesterday, just one point I wanted to make clear, I'm going to bring out when we talked about the whole question of how the Malach of Shabbos is categorized in terms of Mr. Heftzis or Gavra, so to speak, and that whole discussion and Rav Zevin and the whole story. So I think the way it comes out, just to put a fine point on it, is that essentially you have kind of a unique structure that if we do assume like all of those Achronim, not like Rav Zevin, that essentially it's an Isser Gavra, it's all about your being at rest. So that may indeed be the case, but at the same time, it is a unique type of intersection because a malacha is defined by its effect on the world, and not by its effect on you, so to speak. It's defined by its being a tikkun of some sort, and it's defined by it having a consequence and by an act of creation. So essentially, we have a unique combination of chefta gavra, so to speak, that the malacha itself is defined as its chefza, as its effect that it has on the world. But the kapeda of Shabbos is that you, the gavra, should not be doing such an act, should not be performing an act. So I think that Hagdara may affect some things as we'll go along, that this type of hybrid, so to speak, may give us some type of a perspective as to what we're talking about. So when we talk about Zariah, we started to explain yesterday, so there is a major, major fight about, and it's really got the whole world involved in this issue as to what exactly is the Malacha of Zariah. You guys got a chance to see the Rashash, things like that.
Yeah.
So the issue, as we started to explain, has a number of practical nafgaminas just on the surface, even before getting into the later literature. But it first has to do with defining the Malacha. That how could it be that a malacha that essentially only kicks in a few days later. So how can there be a malacha on Shabbos that has that type of framework to it? That if we assume that the malacha is happening on Shabbos, how could you call that a malacha? You put seeds into something that's not making it grow. So what's the difference between putting that into the ground and putting it into this cup? It's the same thing. As the Gemara actually has an expression in a different context, it's kamunach v'kadah, that's not called the Zariah. So if you're going to say that it's not a Zriya until it's actually connected, but it's never going to get connected on Shabbos, so your chayiv from Malacha that's happening during the week, that's impossible. And particularly in light of the fact that the Sugya and Daf Dalet, if you took a look over there, seems to suggest that when it comes to Bishul or Afia, which is similar and different, it's similar because it has a delay, but it's different because it's not inconceivable that you could do it on Shabbos. In normal circumstances, it will be done on the same day. But it could spill over into the next day. But the Gemara there says that, or basically strongly implies, that if you interrupt it in the middle before it stops, that that malacha is not going to be chayiv. Because the Gemara raises the question, if somebody finds himself in this situation, should he observe the din d'rabbanan of not taking it out and essentially buying himself a chiyuv skila? Or do we say that saving himself from the skila overrides the d'rabbanan? The Gemara has discussion, chatei kidei sheyizka atmecha, that you do a little avera to protect yourself from a big avera, so to speak. So we should let you take it out in order to save yourself from the chiyuv. Sounding clearly like you will stop the chiyuv if you interrupt it. So then, what's the story? How does that parallel Zriya? So there are three, but really two core perspectives on this issue, and everyone got pulled into the fight. And essentially, start with the Rashash. The Rashash understanding of this idea is that he works off the assumption, which as we'll see is a very debated assumption, that Zriya and Afia should be treated the same. That it's got to be that they have the same structure. And that being the case, so we have to figure out how are you chayiv for Zriya, if it doesn't happen on Shabbos. And therefore he suggests that the way it works is that you're really chayiv on Shabbos for the Zriya, al tanai, that it has to essentially be confirmed later. That if it is confirmed later that this actually, not you confirming it, but that the act of it taking root is a confirmation of your initial malacha, and that's what makes it happen on Shabbos. Retroactively, so to speak, it becomes clear that you are chayiv on Shabbos. Now, to give you a mashal mahadavar doma, I once moved from one address to the next, and I wanted to register to vote. So I shockingly waited till the last day of the deadline, and I faxed in my registration form. And then I immediately got a call from the Elections Bureau that said that they can't accept my faxed form because they need a signature that's an original, so I should assign the form and mail it in. So I said, but I can't mail it in, it's the last day. If I mail it in, it's not going to get there on time. Not like you know, like it was their problem. why are you only calling me today? So they said not about postmark, but they said that you know when they will accept this faxed form once they get my signed form in the mail. So essentially, I was registering today, al manas that they later get the signed form. So if they never get the signed form, it's as if I never registered. But if they get the signed form later, then the registration was chal that day. So essentially, that's what the Rashash says. That if it turns out later there's a hashrasha, so then this happened today. This happened on Shabbos. So he follows this through all the way. So he says, so basically we have to assume that there is, since he's working off the premise that Zriya and Afia are the same, so that has major nafkaminas in both directions. One major nafkamina, he writes, is that just like the Gemara says, you can interrupt Afia in the middle. So too, you can interrupt Zriya in the middle, and therefore, if after you put the seeds in, this is the extension we just said just now, if you take the seeds out, so then that breaks the condition, and it's not confirmed. It's like I didn't send in the signed form. So the act never happens. The ability to cancel it applies to both. And he then goes on to say a major chiddush, both his points were highly controversial, that they share a parallelism in both directions. So therefore, if I put some bread into the oven a minute before Shabbos is over, so then that will make me chayiv, even though the actual baking takes place on Shabbos. It takes place on Motzi Shabbos, takes place at Bechol. Doesn't matter. I am chayiv because it all goes back to my original action. So these are two major chidushim, and the Menchas Chinuch disagreed with both of them. the Menachas Chinuch in two places, in Reish Tzadiches and also in Shabbos, in his famous essay on Shabbos, which is made into booklet versions now. Many you can buy Menachas Chinuch on Shabbos by itself. So in both places, he establishes that he has a whole different understanding. And the way he sees it is that we don't have to assume that Bishul and Afir are the same. They essentially, Bishul and Zri are the same. They have a different Tagdar. And we'll talk in a few minutes about various reasons why that would be. But so therefore, essentially, Zriah is defined by putting it in the ground. And when you do that on Shabbos, that's called doing it. And Afia is defined by following it through to the end. And that's why the Gemara says that if you interrupt it, it's not going to count. So because of his difference in these premises, he disagrees with both of the halachic conclusions of the Rashash. That in order to be chayiv for Bishul or Afia, you would have to do both parts on Shabbos. You would have to be put in and taken out on Shabbos. Not put in right before the end of the Shabbos and taken out after Shabbos. By taken out, I mean finished. Not a question of whether you take it out or not. And in terms of interrupting Zriah, he says you can't interrupt Zriah. That the act of Zriah is putting it into the ground. And whatever you do afterwards is not going to cancel that. You can do tshuva, cancel it, but you can't go out and take the seeds. That's not going to make a difference.
But the Rishash holds from Machal Ben Drosai in terms of Bishul?
Well, what everyone holds there's got to be some point where, when it comes to bread, it's a little bit of a different shear called krimas, whatever it is, whether it's in terms of Bishul or Afia, Michael Ben Josai, or not, there's a certain point where less than that is not considered to have happened yet. So if you interrupt it before then, that you don't need the Rashash for, because the Gemara says you can interrupt the Afia. So if you interrupt it before then it's going to be canceled. The question is, does that exist by Zriah also? So Rashash says yes. For the Hashrash, you can cancel it, and the Menachas Chinuch says no. And the Menachas Chinuch's view, to explain that view, you can essentially say, so how do you deal with the fact that why should I be chayiv for Zriah on Shabbos if it's like putting it in the cup? It's not considered to have made a difference yet. So here, you could use the following mashal. Let's say I shoot somebody in the head. This is different than the first mashal. I have not actually done this ever. Let's say you shoot somebody in the head, and Nebuchadnezzar, he dies, he's in a coma, and he dies 2 months later. You shoot him in January, and he dies in March. So when did he die? In March. When did you kill him? In January. Right. So you can't come to the police and say you have an alibi for March, because you can't be guilty, you were somewhere else. You killed him in January, but he died in March. And that's a very intuitive distinction, which I think is clearly true. Both halves of that sentence are equally logical, even though they're talking about different months. You can't kill someone without him dying, and yet it can happen 2 months apart, and both halves of the sentence are still true. So presumably that's what's happening here also. You planted it on Shabbos, and it was planted on Tuesday. And it doesn't change the fact that you did what you did on Shabbos, and it had its status later. And then, even if it actually doesn't happen, doesn't matter, because the Maisa is defined by that. So, what is the difference between the two? If you follow the Menachas Chinuch's view, Roshash is assuming that they are parallel, and he follows that with complete commitment. But if you assume the Menachas Chinuch's view that they're not exactly equal, they're not exactly parallel. So, how do we understand that? What's the difference between the two? You want to take a stab at it? How do you distinguish between the two? There are a number of points one could take an entry from. First of all, it could just be... Yeah?
Yesterday, actually, I told you this morning that Zriah, you put in the ground, mm-hmm. and you intend for it to never, ever come back up in the form that it is now. It's supposed to be there forevermore.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Afia, your intention is that this basic form is going to now come out instead of change.
Interesting. I wonder if that's the significant difference between the two. I mean, they're both... Bishul is really all about changing the form.
It is about changing the form?
Pretty much, yeah. Sure. It's all about taking raw food and turning it into cooked food, taking dough and making it into bread. It's not bigger, like the plant, but it's essentially a pretty significant change in the object.
The mice itself. I mean, it really slows the mice. The mice is putting the seed in the ground
for forever.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the ma'aseh, you're putting it on and off, unless the hachzer, you can take it out eventually. Even if like, and it's like the ma'aseh itself is a limited kind of ma'aseh.
But yeah. I think you're right. But I think I'd say it a little bit further, because you are also going to eventually reap the produce. And you're going to come back and get that too.
Right, but that's not right.
So I think you're right that there is some kind of difference, or you know, certainly many have swore that there's some kind of difference in terms of how far that ma'aseh goes. One way to take it is just in terms of linguistics, just the way we talk about it is different. You know, if I were to ask you, did you plant the seeds, in our example, so you're not going to say, if I ask you on Sunday, did you plant the seeds? It's like, no, I'm planting them. Any minute now, I should finish my... You say, you know, you planted them, and you forget about it, essentially. You know, you'll water them, whatever, you'll tend to them, but you're not going to say, I'm still planting them. While, if I ask you, while the bread is in the oven, I say, did you bake the bread? You'll probably say, I'm baking it right now. You consider yourself still involved in the process while it's happening. So that's a linguistic difference, which is probably reflective of something more.
See, in terms of hasra, if you give someone hasra for the planting, mm-hmm. you tell them, no, this isn't planting. It's planting on Tuesday, or whatever, you know.
So that's, that would be an interesting take on it, whether it would affect the... how hasra fits into this whole story.
I'm putting seeds in the ground, but this isn't planting. Don't worry.
And according to the Rashash, maybe you could get hasra in the middle.
Oh, okay.
Right, that would have an interesting ramification.
Not on Shabbos.
Yeah, because maybe you should be obligated to take it out, according to Rashash. So that's itself an interesting discussion. So that linguistic difference is itself a factor sometimes, but it probably also reflects a real difference. Some of the Achronim suggest that, you know, when you have something in the oven, you're always thinking about it. You're not going to forget about it because, you know, house will burn down, or your food will burn, you know, that you're constantly aware, yeah, I've got that in the oven. And, you know, you're not distracted, you say, yeah, I got seeds in the ground, I got to think about that. You basically put it in and you forget about it. Similarly, I also thought there was room to say that essentially, you know, ovens, as old an invention as they are, they're essentially a extension of your hand. There's nothing really so fancy about an oven. That really, when you cook something, you're basically, it's like a barbecue, an old campfire barbecue. You're basically holding the food on top of the fire. Now, you can't actually stick your hand in the fire, so you stick a stick in front of the fire. And nowadays, you don't have to actually stand there with a stick. We have a box that's in the wall that you can leave it there. But that's really just a way of your mechanically holding it over the fire the whole time. So you don't have to use your hand. You can use the box. When you plant something, so it's not that you're doing anything. Your job is to put it in the ground. And that's essentially the whole story. And what happens after that is different. So that's how a number of Achronim have a similar approach to that. That's basically your job is finished when you put it in the ground, while that's not the case when it comes to the oven. You're continuously checking it, or you could say the oven is acting on your behalf, or you could say you're consistently thinking about it. All different permutations of essentially the same idea. Did you know him?
He was two years before.
So he has in his sefer. We started to allude to this yesterday because it's relevant to the whole question of Ashir, and then we said we'll hold off on it. So he says he thinks the Rosh Hashanah is completely wrong, because the difference is that Bishul is about the food, Afiyah is about the food, and Zriya is a malachas karka, is about what happens to the ground. So therefore, when it comes to Bishul, we're interested that you finish up the food change. When it comes to Zriya, the seeds being in the ground, that's essentially the malacha. So to make the comparison, assume they should have the same structure, he thinks that's wrong. And along those lines, he then says that's also why he thinks that there is no shear for Zriya we talked about yesterday. So he is in that whole camp that thinks that Rashi doesn't mean to say that there's a gregarious for Zriya also. We mentioned that a number of Achronim disagree with that premise and assumed you could read Rashi a little bit differently. So he says, yeah, it's because gregarious is a sheer ochel. And Zriya is not about the ochel. It's something that's a vodas karka, so therefore there's no reason to tie it to gregarious. So for that point he makes in both contexts, that as a malachas karka, so therefore you violate Zriya when you put it in the karka, and it's not subject to a shear of Zriya. It's interesting, another point along the difference is was expressed by the Chalkis Yoav and others. But the Chalkis Yoav, we'll mention more in a few minutes, the Chalkis Yoav was really in the Rashash camp. But he says something which helps to... Yes.
Well, I'm just trying to understand what that means exactly. That's it. Zuriya is about the ground.
Yeah, he says it's a malachas karka. It's about doing something to the ground, as opposed to doing something to the truth. Right, that's the way he understands it. So it's about, well, producing it is a later stage. You know, you have to be kotzer it, be ma'amer it, different things you do to produce it, so to speak. But this stage of Zuriya is a malachas karka.
But certainly the guy's only doing it to get food.
Yeah, that's all true. But still, at this stage, it's a malachas karka. Because all the other steps of Siddur Depasa are still all coming from that, and he's still nonetheless saying there's a distinction between the first two and these last nine. The last nine are dealing with Ochel at that point, and the first two deal with karka. It's the cycle of life. And then what comes out of the ground. So first, it eventually will become Ochel, but right now it's ground.
So he says Afia is like, has to do with making food.
Right, so therefore we're interested in the food getting baked. And here we're interested in the land being sown.
So the same way Harisha doesn't have a shear because it's ground, it's dirt.
Right, it's not about Ochlin, which where Grogris is an Ochlin concept. So that's how he assumes.
Mm-hmm. Is there a nafkamina that if you were to plant 2 days before Shemitah?
Mm-hmm. So it's also a question how this fits in with Shemitah, so there could be a distinction also. Shemitah might have a different policy. Maybe Shemitah depends on how you land on this whole issue, but Shemitah might not be the same. Interestingly, Sefer Achinuch actually makes a chiluk within Shemitah along the same lines as the Minchas Chinuch. It says that there's one thing, well, it's actually talking about kiloim, actually. It says there's one, talking about planting kiloim, it says there's one stage when it's usher to do, but in terms of the Isser Hanah that comes from kiloim, the fact that the object is usher, that's going to happen later. So the same divide that there is a first stage, you're doing it and it's done at two different points. So Chalkis Yoav, as we'll discuss, is really a Rashash man. We'll discuss this in a few minutes. We talk about the whole battle that came about. But he makes a point, just relevant also to distinguishing between the two, for the Minchas Chinuch camp, that he suggests that once you put the seeds in the ground, so then they essentially become bottled to the karka, so they don't really exist anymore. They're really, your job with the seeds is essentially over. So that's an interesting idea, because then that raises other questions about taking the seeds out of the ground. Apparently we don't assume that taking the seeds out of the ground is an act of kotzer. The whole question of the rashash and taking it out. So it's a question what to do with the maisa. We'll talk about that maybe in a few minutes. But it doesn't seem to be that anyone considers that to be kotzer. So that could be a reflection of the fact that even though Zareya and kotzer seem to be opposites, it doesn't seem like in practice they're fully opposites, which has a lot of nafkaminas, that there could be, sometimes there's an attempt to learn out one from the other, assuming that they are the inverse of each other. Doesn't seem to always be the case. And Rabbi Shlomo Warman Shlita in his Sefer Oros HaShabbos talks about that question, about why we don't assume that, let's say, if you're the Rashash and you want to take the seeds out of the ground in order to avoid being chayiv, is that a malacha? Even though according to him you can do it on Sunday too, but you can do it on Shabbos. So no one seems to consider a kotzer. Apparently they're not exact opposites. They're not exactly different. So in terms of the Chalkis Yoav that we mentioned, so...
Well, for the Rashash it's actually better.
Better that it's not kotzer?
Right, because meaning for the Rashash it's easier to understand if there hasn't been a Maisa Zriya yet, so there's not going to be a Maisa Ktsira yet either.
He's saying especially Shutaso,
right,
especially
Shutaso, I think.
Right, so but it would seem to be especially him that you need to do it, but even
right,
according
right.
to others,
right.
no one says the question whether it works in terms of being Mabat the Malacha,
right.
but no one seems to
right.
think that it's
right.
Kotsa. Right. According to the Shash and Shutaso,
right.
but all the more so it should be, you haven't done anything yet,
right.
so why should you not be allowed to undo it?
Right.
Correct. So, just in terms of the whole historical issue here, so. The Avnezer, the Egle Tal, essentially lands in the Minchas Chinuch camp with a key quirk, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. Among his Talmidim, this was a big debate, because the Chalkis Yoav was a big Talmud of his, and Chalkis Yoav took the Rashash point of view. And in the Egle Tal is a footnote where he says Chalkis Yoav says differently, his Talmud, and mouth. There's a whole awkward situation because he writes letters to a lot of other people, and it's a whole story back and forth. He has a raya from a Yerushalmi, which the Sfas Emes also brings. I'm not going into the details. The raya took a while about the Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, and about a parallelism that's derived between doing something on Shabbos and it being mutter to do it on Shabbos from sort of before Shabbos, even if it has an effect on Shabbos. So he's assuming there's a parallel there, therefore to put something in the oven on Shabbos and have it baked after Shabbos is going to be chayiv, just like the Rashash. And so the Chalkes Yoav takes this approach against the Avnezer and the like, and others disagree. And there's a whole literature about it because he wrote letters to other people who got involved, including the Emor Yosher. Emor Yosher has a response to him where he disagrees. He has a different take on the Yerushalmi that he quotes. And he also agrees with the Kli Chemda. The Kli Chemda was also a student of the Avnezer, so there's a whole inter-family debate here. But it's not like, you know, they quoted out in Shir. They all wrote in their Svarim later, so it's all out there. That the Kli Chemda is a Sefer on Chumash. It's a very lumdish Sefer on Chumash. It was written by Meir Don Plotsky, who was also a student of the Avnezer. And he thinks that the Rashash Chalkes Yoav camp is wrong, and he says that he thinks it's essentially a logical impossibility to take his view about uprooting the seeds, because he essentially says that the way he understands also a statement in the Yerushalmi that there's a drasha on the pasuk Sheishu Samutav Vasiza Kom Lachtecha that there's no Isser of Shabbos ever during the week. So you can't be Mechal Shabbos on a day other than Shabbos. So there can be Asanis Durabbanon. You know, there can be all kinds of Durabbanons that are relevant, but the Malacha, Isser Malacha, doesn't ever apply during the week. It's on Shabbos. So according to the Rashash's formulation, you're saying that on Saturday night, you could have a Chiyuv to take the seeds out of the ground to avoid being Mechal Shabbos. And both the Kli Chemda and the Emor Yosher, the Meir Arik, they both felt that's a logical impossibility. It can't be that Shmira Shabbos is Mechayiv you to do something on Motzi Shabbos. That is excluded by the whole idea of Sheish Yisom Tavot, that you never have a Chi of Shmira Shabbos during the week. So, therefore, to say Shabbos will force you to take the seeds out, thinks it's not Shaykh. Even though it's funny, it sounds like a kula, but it's a chumra, means you're stuck. You can't, the logic forces it to be that you can't cancel the malacha, but he's saying the ability to cancel the malacha would force you to be Shomer Shabbos after Shabbos, and that's not Shaykh. It has to be that Shabbos is all confined within Shabbos. Marsham also received a letter from the Chalkes Yoav about this and wrote back to him, and he's more in his camp. He has more support for that. So there's the Rashash, Chalkes Yoav, and the Marsham, and many others sided with the Mechasinuch, including the Avnezer and Zagatal and Avnezer and many others. Rav Asher Weiss, Shlita in the Sefer and Shabbos, so he has a different version in terms of the chiluk between Bishul and Zriya, Fia and Zriya. So he has a chiluk which is similar to the above chilukim, but it's got a key difference. I think it's a very interesting point, where he suggests that Zriya happens in nature by itself. And that happens b'day shamayim. You can promote Zriya, but even if there are no human beings on earth, there are still plants growing. While Bishul and Afia never happens by itself. Human beings have to bring it about. But I always thought it was fascinating that bread is considered to be such a staple, because bread is one of the least natural things. You know, fruits and vegetables grow by themselves. Meat, you have to shecht, but at least people are aware that meat is there to be eaten. Animals eat each other. Animals eat meat, but bread is, you know, told me I would never figure out how to make bread. And it's one of the least intuitive types of food. And yet it's considered such a staple. So essentially, so he says like that therefore the malacha is defined as the human contribution that's not natural. So when it comes to Zriya, the only thing the human being does is put seeds in the ground that may not already be there. So therefore, that's the gather of the malacha. Well, when it comes to bishul, the whole thing is essentially a human invention, so therefore the whole process is the malacha. So bishul is defined from beginning to the end, the whole process, while zriya is defined by putting it in the ground. And the hashrasha is a natural process, which is not in your hands, which is similar to what other achronim say, but he puts the focus on a different part of it, which I think is interesting. So there are those who assume that the whole idea of the rashash, that we have kind of this retroactive definition of the malacha, that this is perhaps, it's interesting, this is a Tisha B'Av concept, maybe also we'll have the time to reflect on the parallel here, but that this is similar to the famous view of Rabbi Yochanan in the second parak of Bava Kamma about Eish. That there is a whole discussion over there, Machlokas Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, about how do we have a chiyuv of Eish, right, as far as Nezikin is concerned. That if I set fire to something, or I set fire somewhere, and then a few hours later that fire burns down something, so I'm liable. That's one of the Arba'avos Nezikin. So how does that work? So according to Reish Lakish, say Eish of Mishum Mamono, that it's like my ox. If I let my ox go free and my ox does damage, so then I'm liable. It's not like I did anything. Obviously, my ox knocked down the china shop, but I'm liable because I should have watched that. I should have not let that run free. So a fire maybe is the same thing. The fire acts on its own, but I'm liable because I own it, so to speak, because I set it. While Rabbi Yochanan's view is Eishu Mishum Chetzit, that we compare it to an arrow. So if I shoot an arrow, let's say in a modern context, I shoot a gun or a missile, so it takes a few seconds or a few minutes to get from where I am to where it does its damage, but it's clearly my action. Now, it's not like I let my arrow run free and it does whatever it does. I directed my arrow to a certain place and I sent it there. So that has a couple of consequences. On the one hand, in terms of liability, whether it's like I'm doing it or it's just something that traces itself back to my account, so to speak. But also it has a time factor, that it seems to suggest that my action was done at the, if I say Eishu Mishum Mamono, so by contrast, Eishu Mishum Mamono, my action is done whenever it happens, and I'm liable because it's mine. But Eishu Mishum Chetziv, it's my action, so then it traces back to when I did it, even if its damage is done at a later point. So too, when it comes to maybe this act of Zriya, so to speak, some understand, and that maybe this is a classification that's relevant to other malachas, such as Afiyah also. Maybe anytime you have something which there is some time lag, that maybe that's what's going on, that therefore the chiyuv comes from the moment I did it. It all traces back, just like my chiyuv eish. There's a famous Nemuki Yosef that raises this question in Bava Kamma, that if the liability, if the fire is like I'm doing it, not just that it's mine, so then how can we have Friday night Shabbos candles? Why was that a violation of Havara? It's like I'm burning candles right now, Friday night. So the Mukhi Yosef explains that, no, as far as the time goes, it's back to when I lit them. I lit them on Friday. The action that I did was on Friday. It's just that this is considered to be my action from Friday, and they're still lit on Shabbos as a consequence of my action, which also is brought into that whole discussion about Shabbos, whether you're at rest or, you know, so do you say, is it possible to violate Shabbos by having candles lit because of Eishu Mishum Chetziv? And then explain that it's not shayach for you to be doing nothing, something you did on Friday, and you are to be in violation of Shabbos. So perhaps this whole model is relevant to the whole Zriya / Afiyah question. So in terms of the practicality of the Rosh Hashanah's view about taking out the just halacha l'maisa, in terms of taking out the seeds, so presumably it doesn't hurt, because it's hard to paskin on this issue. It's even though Rov Achronim seem to be against the Rosh Hash, there's also an inyan of a knas, as the Gemara suggests, that maybe it should be taken out anyway as a knas, but in terms of whether it knocks out the chiyuv, so that's it's hard to paskin. It's also no nafkamina b'zman hazeh anyway, but it's presumably kedai to do both because of the knas and because maybe the Rosh Hash is right. So in terms of whether do it on Sunday also then, because that's within the 3 days, but in terms of on Shabbos, so it's brought down in the Sefer Halacha that it depends whether you're dealing with muksa seeds or not. And their muksa usually, as a basic rule of thumb, if they are food, if it's like the type of seeds that either you eat, whatever, sunflower seeds or whatever, or types of seeds that you would feed to your animals, so your own animals, so then it's not muksa, and then you can take it out. If it's a seed that's just there for planting, so then it's muksa, so then you take it out most of Shabbos. But the kind of quirk that the Avnei Nezer has is what happens if you plant it, you do the Maisa Zriya, as it's been defined by the Mechas Chinuch, of putting it in the ground with the intent beforehand of taking it out. Let's say you want to give a planting class on Shabbos. You want to say, here's what I did. And then you plan on taking it out right afterwards. So would that make a difference? So there are those who would say no. But the Avnei Nezer seems to suggest that that itself would make a difference. Perhaps because of a Melechus Machsheves issue, that doesn't have the Kavana of Zriya, because you don't even intend from the beginning for it to have a Hashrasha. So that's a question. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has a tshuva where he doesn't think that that's correct. He doesn't think that that should make a difference. And he says that that's, once we say that's the tzur of the malacha, so that's still the tzur of the malacha, even if you intend to undo it later. So he says, for example, it would be like bona almanas listor, which is the inverse of sosa almanas livnos. We know that in order for sosa to be a malacha, sosa is essentially destructive. So why should it be a malacha? It's a malacha because it's almanas livnos. It's because you have the intent to build on it. But so what would you say about the opposite then? If you're bona almanas listor, you want to build it to knock it down. So that's still going to be a malacha. It's not called makalkel. It's not like you're damaging something with your active building just because you don't intend for the building to last. So too, he says, he thinks that would be the same thing here. He doesn't think that there's any room to say that if you're doing what would be considered a Maisa Hashrasha with the intent to undo it, that that makes any difference in terms of the action itself. If there is a whole discussion by Gedalia Felder in a Sefer Yesodei Yeshurin, discusses the Melachos as well, and he talks about why there's a din in Shulchan Aruch that if you want to throw seeds onto the ground because you have, let's say, your chickens, you have your animals who are going to eat them. So since it takes 3 days, let's say, for them to become assimilated into the ground, there's a whole discussion whether it has to be covered or not. That's something we'll talk about probably tomorrow at this point. But that question aside, so presumably if I'm throwing seeds at the ground, that runs a risk of Zriya. So what if my animals are on the ground and I want to throw the seeds for them to eat? So then it says in Shulchan Aruch that you should only put what they're likely to eat in 1 day or in 2 days, but now it's going to take them 3 days to eat because that runs a risk of being absorbed into the ground, runs a risk of Hashrasha. So he asks on the Menchas Chinuch then, but does the Menchas Chinuch say it's a Maisa right away? Doesn't have to wait for the Hashrasha. So we should say it's not only a 3 day quantity that's going to be a problem, but any quantity should be a problem. So there's a discussion about this, the Sefer, contemporary Sefer called the Yunan Bahalacha, who talks about this. He has two approaches. I think that the second one is more instinctively correct, just that you don't need to come on to the first one. In the first one, he says, maybe this is not called a Maisa Zriya, it's called a Maisa Hachala. You're feeding your animals, it's not called a Maisa of planting. But I think the second answer he gives is probably more likely, that essentially, since you know it's likely to get consumed before the Hashrasha, so then it's like putting it in an infertile section. It's like the same way if you plant in a desert or if you plant in this cup. So it's not called planting because there's nothing there to make it nourished. So essentially what the Shulchan Aruch is saying is that the extreme likelihood that, or basically certitude, that the animals are going to eat up these seeds before they have a chance to take root. So then that's like planting in infertile ground. And therefore, makom that's not roi laholit. So that's not going to... it's not going to be an issue.
Does that fit into Rav Shmuel Zisel's idea of
that it's about the karka? I think either way, if it fits into everybody's idea that he's saying the ground's not going to get absorbed because they're gonna eat it right away, so uh-huh. it's the ground's oh, not so going to ever not going to get it. I think so. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Just Piderach Hadrosh, she also points this out in the Yunam Bahalacha. Mm-hmm. In a very different area, he quotes from the Baal HaTanya, that the idea that we have of Zareh et Tzedakos. Why do we use that word? It says because the merit, the zchus, that comes from tzedaka, works the same way as Zriya, the same way the Achronim were saying that the Zriya, you do your job, you put it in the ground, and what happens afterwards is B'day Shamayim. So too, so you do your tzedakah, and then the effect that tzedakah has, that's out of your hands. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can make that have a tremendous merit, a tremendous chus, but it basically operates the same way as Malach of Zriya does. You do your part, and what happens after that is B'day Shamayim. But this whole discussion so far prompts a very major issue, which a number of Sfarim talk about, two different aspects. And it's an issue throughout Shabbos, but it's worth mentioning here. One is raised by Rav Pesach Frank. Rav Pesach Frank in his Tshuvas Har Tzvi has a whole section on the Malachos, as do so many others. And he says he's just not bothered by this question at all, because he basically rejects the assumption that malachas are parallel to each other in any way. He says we don't have any basis to assume all malachas have to be equal. He has a raya why that's true, which is about a different malach. We'll talk about it at a different point. But that's one major issue here. Should we assume that malachas are parallel to each other? Should we assume that the mechanism that's true for Afia should be the same mechanism that's true for Zriya? Or do we say, no, that doesn't bother me? So that's an interesting question. It seems on the surface they probably should be somewhat parallel to each other, unless the Malacha itself has some inherent reason to be defined differently, which may be the case here. But the idea that the question doesn't need to be asked, I don't know what your thoughts are about that. It's an interesting issue. Another issue which comes out of this discussion in a parallel way, partially because of the possible comparisons to Shvius and to Kiloyim and the like, is an issue that's discussed at length by Rav Moshe Brown in his Sefer Tevas Moshe, where he talks about this malacha. And he gets into a whole essay at this from the starting point about to what extent do we have the right to draw rayas for Hilchos Shabbos from other areas of halacha. Should we assume that other areas of halacha follow the same rules, or should we assume that that's not the case? And it seems that there are at least two reasons to be hesitant there, to compare within the malachas for two pesos point. We have to figure out why we shouldn't assume malachas are the same. When it comes to comparing malachas to other things, I think at least two reasons exist, maybe three reasons exist, let's say. One is the machsheves component, that tends to define things differently. I don't know how much time we'll have to get into Malachas Mashavis at length. So I highly recommended Rav Asher Weiss and his Sefer on Chumash, actually, also, I think it was reprinted in Sefer on Shabbos, as a whole essay where Avram asked a question yesterday that if the Rambam doesn't hold from Malach Shin Tzrich L'Gufa being Pater, so what is the Malach Mashavis? He has a whole essay there where he lists, I think, 12 or 13 halachas that come out of Malach Mashavis and building a theory of what Malach Machshavis is. It's a very overarching concept. It has all kinds of ramifications, sometimes mostly the Kula, sometimes the Chumra, at least in one famous example, which maybe we'll talk about. So that already could just paint all of Hilchos Shabbos differently than everything else. Another element is the Mishkan. That if the Mishkan is what defines how Malachas are learned, so then since that's not so influential in other areas of Halachas, so then maybe that impacts on our ability to bring rayas from one to the next. And the third is what we were saying yesterday and a little bit today also, that maybe Shabbos has a different focus, that maybe other areas of halacha maybe are going to be chefza based sometimes, while if Shabbos is gavra based, then they also have different rules, as we saw between Shabbos and Shvius and the like. So there are a number of reasons why maybe we'll be hesitant sometimes in terms of drawing a parallel between Shabbos and other issues. And again, if you want to look in the Sefer Tevas Moshe for a more lengthy essay about that. The Sefer Bikuri Yitzchak suggests that all of this goes back to that whole question about that we just mentioned a second ago about whether Shabbos is about the Gavra or about the item, that maybe that's also reflected in the Mechasinach and the Rashash, that Rashash is worried about the gavrus, the rest about the chefta, so to speak, about the malacha happening, while the minchas chinuch says it's all going to be about you. So since we can make this distinction between, like we said before, when you killed somebody and when he was killed, when it's planted and when you are planting, so we're only interested in when you are planting, because Shabbos is about your being at rest, and therefore maybe that's the minchas chinuch's position, and maybe the Rosh Hashanah takes a different view, that we're more interested in the effect on the world, and if it's later established that you brought about this effect, so then you are going to be liable. So we should have a few more minutes. Let me just bring up the point of Atzah Snakov, which is itself somewhat of a lengthy discussion. We'll just talk about it a little bit. So first of all, we know there's some show and tell. So the difference between a, right now this is a Atzah She'eino Nakov. Thank you. Here you have a pot that is not perforated. So if I'm going to put this on land, put this in ground, so presumably there's not going to be any connection between what's in here and what it's connected to. Although, we'll discuss this separately probably tomorrow, the question about what kind of planting I do in here. Let's say I got soil in here and I want to plant something within the pot. That's one question. But what about, let's say I have a potted plant and I want to put this in the ground, so presumably there's not going to be any hashrasha, any yanika between the two, because the pot is interrupting it. But what if it's an atzitz nakuf, right? So what if there's a hole in it? So now, you know, the holes are there for a reason. I put this in the ground, so then presumably that gives me a zriya issue. I'm presumably connecting this to the ground. But sometimes it's done in a way that you put it on pegs, on yusedos, so it's not really separated. It's just now there's instead of being in the karka, it's physically a little bit away from the karka, but there's still a relationship between the two, which is, again, why these things exist, because different ways of making flowers and plants. So the Gemara says that that's an issue of Zareya and Tolish. Somebody moves from one position to the other, moves from the pegs down or up onto the, that would be a Zareya issue, and bringing up from the ground on top of the pegs, that would be a Tolish issue. So Rashi and Tosfos, however, say that that's really actually the Rabbanim, that that doesn't really mean that doesn't mean that it's really actually considered to be the Malacha. And the Rambam does see it as, it sounds like from the Rambam, like it is the real, literally, like it sounds like it is a real Malacha. So what exactly is going on there? So it seems to be that there is a number of questions here, but one of the questions relevant to this Malacha and relevant to other Malachas is essentially when you're moving it from one place to the next, so you are not really changing its status. It's not like right now it's not growing and you're making it grow, or it was growing and you're stopping it from growing. Maybe you're slowing the pace. Right, so now it's going to grow a little more slowly because it's lifted up here, or it's going to grow more quickly because it's put down there. So this is a broader question. Is there an ister of a malacha in doing a malacha, but not doing it in that it wasn't there before and now it is, but changing the pace, making it happen more quickly and making it happen more slowly?
What about watering and soaking?
So then watering is a question. So the Eglei Tal thought, you know, for Rambam it's not going to be a question because the Rambam will ask you both. The Eglei Tal has a chiluk that others have also, that maybe there's a difference between accelerating and enhancing. That to actually enhance it, to make it grow better by watering it, so to speak, that is Zareya. To make it make the plant grow better in general, that's going to be Zareya. To make it grow quicker, the same way, or slower, in the inverse situation, maybe that's not considered to be the Malacha. It could be. It sounds like it's against the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi that we mentioned yesterday, where we talked also about the stopping of the negatives, about taking out the insects and the like. So there it has a klal, anything that improves the growth, and it sounds like it's talking about whether it's better or quicker or anything. It sounds like from the Yerushalmi that it's a all going to be part of Zareya. So the Sefer Pri Moshe is a beautiful Sefer on a lot of things. There's a Sefer on Shabbos as well. So he suggests this all also kind of connects into the Rosh Hashanah and the Minchas Chinuch, really. because what are we talking about? Is the melacha of Zareya doing something to bring about a Zriya, or is it making the connection? So if it's making the connection between the Zera and the point of Hashrasha, so presumably that can only happen once, or it can be undone, but it doesn't get more done and less done. It's either done or not done. So then the idea of having a malach of Zareya on something that is already Zarua doesn't really fit. And maybe that's why some Rishonim say you essentially can't. Either it's connected or unconnected, you can't connect it more or less. While the idea of, if you believe that it's basically your Maisa of Zariya, that's the issue, more or less the Menachas Tinuch, so then maybe this is also a Maisa, okay, so you can also do another Maisa of making it a little bit more connected, making it less connected, and the fact that you're already, you know, in Bishol Achar Bishol, for example, so to say, in Zariya Achar Zariya, maybe yes, there is a Zariya Achar Zariya, because it's all about the action of the Zariya that's going to flow from this. Okay, so this is what to say about Atzis She'enu Nakav, and we'll talk about that a little bit more tomorrow. We'll just quickly review what we spoke about. So we spoke about essentially that there is this whole question, how do you have a Malach of Zariya? Does it parallel Afia or not? Especially in light of the fact that the Gemara says you can interrupt Afia. So how do you have Zariya on Shabbos, and is it subject to being interrupted? So the view of the Rashash is that they are exactly the same. In both cases, we're only interested in the first part that you do on Shabbos. If you cancel it after Shabbos or on Shabbos, anytime the malacha is going to be canceled retroactively. You're only chayiv if it's confirmed by it reaching its end point even at a later point. And therefore, also when it comes to afiyah, it's also possible to put something in the oven right before the end of Shabbos, have it get finished after Shabbos, and for you to be chayiv. Menachas Chinuch disputes those halachic conclusions. He believes that there's a difference between afiyah and zriya. So afiyah, your action is finished when it gets baked, but zriya, your action is finished when you put it in the ground, and therefore afiyah has to take place fully on Shabbos in order for you to be chayiv, and coming back afterwards and taking the seeds out is not going to make a difference. And then we talked a little bit about some of the different explanations about why this should be. We talked about different permutations of similar ideas, either the linguistic difference, I'm baking in the oven, I have planted the seeds. You pay attention to what's in the oven, you don't pay attention to what's in the ground. You've done the maisa on your part that's relevant, as opposed to the case with the baking. Or we talked about maybe the oven is really an extension of your hand while the ground is not. Various reasons to possibly distinguish between the two. And we mentioned the Chalkes Yoav, who, you know, against his interest here, just in terms of the Menachas Chinuch, giving a difference also, that maybe the seed is considered batel to the karka once it's in the karka, and discussed on why is it not an issue of kotzer for you to take it out. Apparently they're not really exact opposites. And then we discussed Reb Shimcha Zussel Broyd's approach, that the Rosh Hash is wrong because Zriya is about the karka, so Bishul is about the food, so we're interested in the food being finished, but the karka is already sown. And he applies that also to why he thinks there's no shir for Zriya, and that's how we should read Rashi, not like others have read Rashi. And we talked about the Chelkis Yoav taking a side in favor of the Rosh Hash against his Rebbe Avni Nezer and against his Chavrusa, maybe the Kli Chemda, and how he wrote letters to others, had a raya from the Yerushalmi, and some, like the Marasham, agreed with him. Others, like the Kli Chemda and the Meirosha, disagreed with him, and they suggested that the Rosh Hash's position is essentially, and the Chalk Yov's position, that you can cancel it after Shabbos is a logical impossibility, because you can only be Mechal Shabbos on Shabbos, and therefore to say there's a burden for you to undo your Melacha after Shabbos isn't going to work. And then we talked about some who explained the Rosh Hash's view in light of Rabbi Yochanan's Eishim Mishim Chetziv, that whatever you set into effect, like in the case of a arrow or fire, traces back to you. Maybe that's what's going on here as well. And then we talked about the practical question of taking out the seeds afterwards, whether it helps or not. Seems to be it's worth the bet, but the question of in terms of Halachos Shabbos, so it's really not treated as a kotzer issue, as a muktza issue could come up. So if it's edible seeds, not going to be muktza. If it is not edible seeds, it would be muktza, then you probably should wait till after Shabbos. And we talked about the Avnei Nezer's position that even though he agrees with Minchas Chinuch that the Maisa Hashra is the whole story, Maisa Zriya is the whole story, but if when you did the Zriya, you didn't have intent to leave it there, maybe that would make a difference. We mentioned Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach's position that he doesn't think that should make a difference, that it's basically comparable to Bona Almanas Listor, which is not going to be any different. And then we talked about the Yisod Yishurin's question about why does the Shulchan Aruch allow you to scatter seeds on the ground if they'll be consumed in 1 or 2 days. Why is that not the same thing as a Minchas Chinuch, putting it into the ground regardless of the Hashrasha afterwards? So we mentioned a few approaches. One we thought was most likely is that that's considered to be infertile ground because you know it's going to get eaten up, and it's no different than planting in the desert, which is also not an act of Zriya. And then we mentioned that some of the major broader issues that are brought up by this whole discussion is the question of can malachos be compared to one another, the Tzvi Pesach Frank thinking that they should not be compared to one another, and also other areas of halacha, can they be brought in? We mentioned a number of reasons why we think Shabbos might have key differences, one of them being the whole Gavra Cheftza Chiluk, which is that Bikur Yitzchak mentioned might be relevant here also, that the Rashash seems to be interested in the Cheftza of the ground, having a Hashrasha, and the Minchas Chinuch is interested in what you're doing, regardless of what actually happens afterwards. Then we got a little bit into the Atzitz Nakov story, Atzitz Sheinu Nakov story, and the Gemara says that with an Atzitz Nakov being picked up, or picked up from the ground onto the pegs, or put back down, that there is an issue there of Zriya and Tolesh, but some of the Rishonim say it's really only an issue of the Rabbanan. The Rambam sounds like it's an issue of the Raisa. So we mentioned that this is really a broader issue of if you're not a question of doing a malacha, but speeding it up or slowing it down, is that also considered to be a problem? And we mentioned the Agatal's chiluk between making it happen faster and making it happen better, which seems to be against the Rishonim, but could at least help the Rishonim who say that making it happen faster is not an actual malacha. And then it was suggested by the promotion that also correlates this whole question of the Rosh Hashanah and the Minchas Chinuch. Do we say that it's all about planting something being planted, and therefore it either is or isn't, so it's not shayach to say have Zriya Acher Zriya, or is it about your Maisa Zriya, which maybe you could do even to something which is already in a state of Hashrasha. So those are some points. Hopefully we'll finish Zriya tomorrow. We'll try to discuss some of the Maisa points. And, you know, Chorish overlaps with it, so we're getting into it a little bit. We should hopefully segue seamlessly into Chorish. Okay, Yashkoach.